This is an oral history interview with Marjorie Harris, conducted in Mount Horeb on the 2nd of April, 2013. The interviewer is Crawford Young. The first question is to ask if you would say a few words about where you grew up, about your family background.
I grew up in Denver, and my father was a newspaper man for many years in Texas, and then he had his own advertising agency in Denver. Mm-hmm. And then I lived in Denver until I got married and then moved away.
And
Chicago.
Where did you do your university work?
Chicago.
At the University of Chicago? What years were you there? Do you remember?
I'd have to look it up. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Was it during the war?
It was when,
Hutchins.
Hutchins was there.
When Robert Hutchins was president of the university. Yeah. Well, those must have been exciting times.
Well, they were interesting times,
Interesting times, at least.
Yeah. We had the guys working underneath the old stadium that was no longer a stadium, because they quit having any
football.
And they were working on the atom bomb. Nobody knew what they were doing, but what's his name? Fermi was there and working in over there. Nobody knew what they were up to, but we found out.
It was the atomic bomb. So after Chicago, how did you get from University of Chicago to Madison?
Well, I was married to Chet Harris, and he got an appointment at the university here.
Mm-hmm.
So
that would have been shortly after the war?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And then from there, initially, did you have any kind of employment before you began at the African Studies Program?
No. Uh-uh. I don't think so, no.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember.
What happened was I had a friend who was a friend of the guy that ran Ibero-American Studies, and she said he was looking for somebody, and I said, I'm not interested. And she said, well, go see him anyway. So I went to see him. What was his name? I've forgotten now.
Norman Sachs.
Norman Sachs, okay. I went to see him, and Phil Curtin was a friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
And he saw me coming out of Norman Sachs' office. He said, what are you doing in his office? He said, if you want a job, come to work for us. That's how I got there. I said, well, I'm not looking for a job. He said, well, think about it. So that's how I got there.
Oh, you had no previous particular contact with Africa or African studies?
No.
Had you ever happened to take a course about Africa when you were at the University of Chicago? I don't know that they had anybody who taught about Africa.
I don't think so,
no. So that would have been the fall of 1964. I do remember you began at the same time.
Yeah.
I was asked by Phil Curtin to become chair of the African Studies Program.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they had any office staff before.
No, they had a girl whose name I can't remember, who was a student, grad student, and she worked for Africans, but
could it have been Mitchell?
Huh?
Could it have been Mitchell? That name sticks in my mind.
That sounds familiar to me, too, yeah.
So it was just Phil Curtin
it
and
was
one
just,
student.
It was just
typist.
A connection with Phil. And as I said, I had a friend that asked me to go see Norm Saxon. I said, I'm not looking for a job. He said, well, go see him anyway. So I saw him, but I wasn't interested in their job. And Phil said, well, don't go to work for him. Come to work for us. And that's how I got there. I don't know quite how.
Well, it was at a time when a number of the, you know, very well-educated and talented women who happened to be faculty wives began to move into one or another, often with the university, many of them becoming undergraduate advisors. I imagine a number of your acquaintances followed that route about the same time. So, had you known Phil Curtin for a long time?
Yeah. I knew, well, you know the Curtin's history, and I knew them both before and then after they got back together, you know, I mean, and been friends with Ann still. They were just personal friends, as you know, I mean, it wasn't, there was no connection with the job or anything.
So,
but he, a friend asked me to go see Norm Saxon, and I said, I'm not looking for a job, and I'm not interested in that, in Ibero-American studies anyway, and but please go see him. So I did, and Phil just said, well, don't work for him, come work for us, and that's how I got there.
So what, when you came into the African Studies Program offices, which I remember well, was just two quite small rooms in the Social Science Building.
That's right.
What were the nature of your responsibilities?
You really want to know?
Just about everything.
Yeah. I mean, the chairman of the program would come in once a week to sign things. Mm-hmm. But all the daily routine and keeping things going was my job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything about the financial resources available to the program at that time?
We didn't have much. I remember we stayed up till midnight getting off a thing to Washington to try to get money. And we got some money then from Washington on the, what was that program?
National NDEA Title VI program.
Yeah, that's when we got our first money, yeah.
And I remember Phil Curtin turning up one day in the fall of 1964 when you and I were both new to the program with this application in his hand and told us quite forcefully, as was Phil's style, that this is something that had to be done right away.
I know. Spent the night doing it, practically, as I remember.
To the dismay of the present or recent staffs who've had to cope with this application every 3 years, it's now a gigantic application form. At that time, as I recollect, it was only 3 or 4 pages. It took a lot of time to do it, but it was nothing like it.
Yeah.
As elaborate as it later became.
Oh, yeah.
What recollections do you have of the fairly rapid growth of the African Studies program?
Boy, it's a long time ago. I've got to stop and think. What's the name of the guy that went to Australia?
Bob Smith.
Huh? Oh, Bob Smith.
Bob Smith.
Well, he was there then.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went to Australia. I've forgotten who. took over after that.
It was David Wiley, I think.
Was it David then?
I believe so.
He was difficult in that he was an overachiever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he, I don't mean to that sound right, but I mean, he always did more than needed to be done.
Uh-huh.
And many a time we stayed until midnight getting an application in and time and that sort of thing. And David would have something this thick, you know, to send in. Finally had the woman in Washington say, look, we don't want all that stuff. We don't need all that stuff. Stop sending it to us.
And David Wiley was chair for several years.
Yeah.
And then failed to get tenure in sociology. And do you recollect what your title was at the time?
No, I don't. I don't know if I had a title even.
Yes.
I think it was just...
Assistant.
Yes, I do. It was like assistant director or something like
assistant.
That.
Then after David Wiley, was it Fred Hayward who...
Fred.
...replaced David Wiley?
Wasn't there somebody in between now?
There might have been. Neil Skinner was chair sometime early in the program.
Well, he was in the department, though.
He was in the Department of African Languages and Literature. That's correct.
But, that guy from...
Oh, Emil Snyder. He was...
Oh, Emil.
He was chair of the African Lang and Lit. I don't think he was chair of the program.
He was in the department, yeah. Yeah, not... But we had, worked with him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Gosh, bringing up all kinds of old memories.
Did, at the time when you first began, were you also serving as a assistant for the African Languages and Literature Department? Or were they already separate?
No, I think when we first started, yeah.
Yeah, that's my recollection, too.
And then it split up, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of the different chairs, you served the African Studies program for a quarter of a century?
I guess so.
I think it was 24, 25 years.
Boy.
And so you had the opportunity to work with a number of chairs.
Yeah.
Of those you worked with, who do you recollect as the most effective leaders of the program?
Well, that's very hard to say.
Mm-hmm.
Phil, of course, I really can't.
Mm-hmm. Are there, what were some of the high points of your career with African Studies? What are some of the fondest memories you have of the program?
I think getting to really know people in all the different departments.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like Emil Snyder and people in different departments, that I wouldn't have known otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fascinating job, but it just had so many different aspects to it.
Mm-hmm.
And was always something interesting going on. Got me to Africa. Anyway.
So. You did get to Africa, but where did you visit in Africa?
Senegal, mostly.
Yeah. Oh, more than once.
Twice.
Well, one of the former directors was a Senegalese scholar by origin, Idriss Makward. I'm sure you remember Idriss very well.
Oh, yeah, I'm still good friends with them. They're not here now. Their daughter moved to Hawaii, so they're over there visiting. But they're close friends. So it was a good time, yeah.
And other chairs that I recollect, let's see, beyond Fred Hayward and Idriss Makward, Neil Skinner, Jan Van Sina.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Was chair.
Yeah.
Do you have a positive recollection of working with Jan Van Sina?
Yes. Yes, he was a very good person to work with. He knew what he wanted, and he did it, and yeah,
it was done.
Yeah. Oh, he was fine. Unfortunately, his wife was ill a lot of the time, and that caused some problems.
Still is.
Is she?
Yeah. So he has to be careful about traveling and so forth. He can't go far away. Were there any really low points in your African studies career that stand out?
No, not really. I just enjoyed it all, and it was very intriguing. I learned a lot, things I didn't know at all before, it was a very interesting job. It was a responsible job because the chair would sometimes just come in once a week to sign things, and the rest of the time I had to see that things got done.
As you reflect on your time with the program, what kinds of changes did you see over the years? Does it seem more like it flowed along on a more or less smooth track? Were there things that really altered over the years?
Well, it changed a lot, I think. I mean, more people got involved in it. Mm-hmm. More faculty got involved in it, and were more active in it, and so it changed in that way. And it depended so much on who was chair. Sometimes we had an active chair, and sometimes we had one who just came in to sign papers and so on, you know. But it was always interesting and always when Phil was chair, it's interesting when you were in. A lot of interesting people to work with.
There were.
Yeah.
There were indeed. Over the years, do you recollect roughly when you made the trips to Senegal? You started your work there without any prior connection to Africa, but over the years you developed, through your association with the program, an active interest in Africa and its challenges.
Yeah, I went to Senegal, I don't remember just when, but I was there twice, I know, two different times, And
were you there on your own, or were you traveling to Senegal as part of a group of some sort?
No, I was on my own, or with mm-hmm. with somebody in the program.
Mm-hmm.
I was there with Idris and
uh-huh.
Julie were there. I remember.
So you were taken to Saint Louis, I'm sure, by Idris.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And well, over the years, what kinds of changes did you notice in the university itself in your years of association, even before you were working in African studies?
Changes in the university?
Yes. Is there anything that stands out in your mind as to what made the difference, the university look different in, let's say, the 1980s from
I'm not providing
1950s.
You with much, am I?
Oh, yes.
Well, the interest in all of the different... they didn't have the interest in the different areas that they did later on.
Mm-hmm.
And... but not a lot of change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of change, no.
Remember more stability than,
yeah.
than anything dramatic that
yeah.
made the campus seem different in the 1980s than it was in the 50s when you first moved to Madison.
Yeah, except... but we were sort of separate from...
Mm-hmm.
You know, the program was a little unit of its own, so that
mm-hmm.
if there were changes in the university, why,
mm-hmm.
they didn't affect us much. I remember staying up till mm-hmm. midnight getting those darn applications into Washington to get some money. And
is there anything else that stands out in your memory I haven't thought to ask you about?
I haven't given you much information, have I? You're just that,
you've given me some very useful bits and pieces.
Well, no, it was just that some chairs were more active than others, and
mm-hmm.
some...
Who stands out as most active?
Hmm?
Who stands out as most active among the chairs that you work with?
Well, Jan and you and remember Bob Smith? He went off and left us, and it's hard to go, that's a long time ago. I've got to go back and think about it. Phil, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, that was, it was just funny how I got into it, and completely funny, because it was all an accidental, you know.
I think in the lives of most of us, there are strange accidents that change the course of our life one way or another.
Yeah.
And looking back, you can't... What would have happened if that accident had never occurred?
Right.
Things could have been very different.
I'll say.
Well, this concludes our oral history interview with Marjorie Harris. Thank you very much, Marjorie.